Morning. We're on Daf Chaf Hei Amud Aleph, and we're up to B'Yom Tov, which is the beginning of the third line. So we've established that you don't destroy Kodshim Shenifsalu. So let's say, for example, they shechted the Behemoth Kodesh, and the Basar contracted Tumah. So in that case, you have to, let's say, destroy the Kodshim. And we don't do this on Yontif. Likewise, if Truma is contaminated, then we don't burn it on Yontif. Not only that, the Gemara says you can't even use it as a Ner Yontif, or in a case where Yontif overlaps with Friday, you can't use it as a Ner Shabbos. And we explain that the reason for this is because you might come to do Hatoyas HaNer. However, if not for the fact that it was Yontif, it would be Mutter. You'd be allowed to light it as your candle. What that means is you'd be allowed to benefit from the Shemen of Truma Tmea, what we call Shemen Sreifa. You'd be allowed to benefit from its light, from its warmth. You could put your pot on top of the fire and cook your food. So that's where the Gemara is medayik. B'yontif hu di asur. On Yontif, there's a separate isur that we're not allowed to destroy Kodshim Shenifsalu or Truma Tmeya on Yontif. And the Gemara had a number of different yalfuses, possible sources for that halacha. Habechol, the implication is that on a weekday, if you want to use the Shemen of Truma Tmeya to enjoy the benefit of it, shapir dami, it's fine. There's no Iser Hanah, there's no prohibition against benefiting from the light or the warmth, etc., of Shemen Truma Shenitma. So while you're burning it, as we would say, Toch Kedei Asreifa, you're allowed to benefit from it. My timer. What is the formulation? And then the Gemara is going to ask, Heichon, how do we know this? So the formulation is Rav. Omar Rav, Kishem Shemitzvah Lisrof HaKodshim Shenitmu. So you shechted an animal that was Kodesh, and now the meat of the animal, the Basar, was Mekabel Tuma, and you have to burn it. Kach Mitzvah Lisrof Es HaTruma Shenitmes. So too, when Truma becomes Tomei, becomes Tmeya, then you have a mitzvah of burning it. And that's what we call again Shemen Sreifa, Truma Shenitmes. The Amra Torah, the Torah says, B'shas Bi'ura, while you're destroying it, Teheni Mimenu, you're allowed to have benefit from it. So the Gemara asks, Heichan Amra Torah, where is the source in the Torah that allows me to benefit from the Shemen of Truma Tmeya while I'm burning it? And the Gemara is going to offer a number of different possibilities. So we're back to Heichan Amra Torah. What is the source in the Torah for the permission to enjoy the benefit of Shemen Sreifa while you're burning the Shemen Truma Shenitmes? So first the Gemara quotes Midr Rav Nachman. The Omer of Nachman, Omer Rava Baravua, Omer Kra. The Torah says in the Parsha of Truma, it says in Bamidbar Perkid Ches, Vani Hinena Sati Lecha Es Mishmeres Trumosai. Hashem spoke to Aaron HaKohen and he says, I have given you my truma as a safeguard. Safeguard means that you have to watch the truma carefully, make sure that it doesn't receive tuma. But it says trumosai in the plural. And why trumosai in the plural? B'shtei trumos hakosuv medaber. The Torah is referring to two categories of truma. Achas, truma tahora. The achas, truma tmeya. With regard to truma tahora, the Torah says you have a mitzvah to give it to the Kohen. With regard to truma tmeya, you have a mitzvah to burn the truma. But v'yamar rachmana lecha, the Torah adds the word nasati lecha es mishmeres trumosai. The word lecha is an extra word, and it always comes to teach you a heter hadna. Whenever the Torah says lecha, it's for you, it means that you can benefit from it. And how do you benefit from truma tmeya? I mean, truma tahora, you give it to the Kohen, and he has a mitzvah of eating it. But truma tmeya, what benefit can you get from it? And the answer is, shalcha tehela sika tachas tavshilcha. It's yours so that when you burn the truma tmeya, you can put a pot of food on top of the fire, and the flame is going to cook the contents of your pot. The second possibility to derive this heter hanah is from Rabbi Avo. And this is the parasha of Maser Sheni. And in the parasha of Maser Sheni, when we bring the Maser Sheni to Yerushalayim, we recite a parasha called Vidui Masros. That's a recitation. And Amar Rabbi Avoh, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, in that recitation it says, V'lo bi'arti mimenu bitameh, which means that I did not consume the Maaser Sheni bituma. Now bituma means two things. Number one, it means that if the Maaser Sheni contracts tuma, you're not allowed to eat the Maaser Sheni. And number two, it means that if you're tameh, that's called Tumas Agavra, then you're not allowed to eat the Maaser Sheni. So he makes a confession, and it's a long discussion here why it's called confession, why is this called Vidu. The Mishnah in Maaser calls this Vidu. Vidu usually means when you confess your sins. Here you're claiming that you did everything perfectly. In any event, it says, Lo bi'arti mimenu bitome. And the Torah here adds one extra word. And that's mimenu. It could have said lo biarti betome. I didn't violate the laws of tumah with regard to Maaser Sheni. I was very careful about the holiness of the Maaser Sheni. Why does it say mimenu? Mimenu iata mavir avalata mavir shemen shel truma shenitmes. Now let me explain this, and this is we're about to. We're on the threshold of a major sugya. The word mimenu is an exclusion, and it's telling me that although I'm not allowed to consume Maaser Sheni bituma, but it's excluding something else. We'll call it X. And Rabbi Yochanan is going to assume he knows what X is. The Gemara is going to have a whole. Didactics here. Is Rabbi Yochanan absolutely correct? Well, can we question his understanding of X? And he says that the X, which says that you're not allowed to consume Maaser Sheni in Tumah, is coming to exclude Shemen Srefa, which means Truma that became Tomei. That you're allowed to consume. Now what does that mean, you're allowed to consume? Obviously the mitzvah is to burn the Shemen Srefa, but you're allowed to consume means you're allowed to enjoy the benefit of it. Now by way of introduction to this sugi that we're about to begin, the Gemara wants to know, how do you know the exclusion here is Truma? Maybe the exclusion here is Kodshim, which means then the case of Kodshim, that the Basa Kodshim, that contracted Tuma, the Torah requires that you burn it. Perhaps in this case, the Torah is telling you, as opposed to Maaser Sheni, you're allowed to benefit from the consumption, meaning while you're burning it, you could have Hanah from the Sreifa. And this is going to project us into the following Sugya. What is the relationship between Kodshim and Truma? In other words, we're going to try to create a hierarchy of what we call Kedushas Isur. Kedushas Isur means that the Torah says you have to be very careful about kodshim. There are many, many different chumras in kodshim. We're going to list six of them as we go through the sugya. And on the other hand, there are many chumras in truma. And we're going to list four of them in this sugya. And we're going to do a comparative study over here, because once the word mimenu is coming to exclude something, which means it's coming to allow you to benefit from something, that's called a heter. So the mimenu is coming to tell you that although in Maaser Sheni you're not allowed to benefit when you burn the Maaser Sheni bituma. Let's say, for example, Maaser Sheni contracted tuma, and you have to burn it, you're not allowed to benefit from that sreifa. You can't use it for light, for illumination, you can't use it for heat, you can't cook your pot on it. All that is prohibited in Maaser Sheni, but Mimenu tells me that in other cases of something that's sacred, that's holy, you're allowed to benefit from the sreifa. Well, we should exclude something that is less chamur than something else. Meaning we have now two candidate choices. We have truma and we have kodshim. So the Gemara immediately asks, V'ema perhaps mimenu, maybe the exclusion of mimenu, I'ata mavir aval ata mavir shemen shel kodesh shenitma. If the pasuk is coming to exclude something from mimenu, from Maaser Sheni, and tell you that in contrast you're allowed to benefit from the sreifa, maybe the Torah is allowing you to benefit from the sreifa of kodshim shenitmu. Now, what would be the case of Shemen Shel Kodesh and Nitmu? So, in the case of Parshas Menachos, the Torah says that you makdish Shemen leMincha. The Torah requires oil in the process of bringing a Mincha. That is what's called Kedushas HaGuf. It's sanctified for the Mizbeach. And now, it became Tomei. If this Shemen Shel Kodesh contracted Tuma, now you have to burn it. Maybe the Torah is telling you you're allowed to benefit from the burning of Shemen Kodesh, but not necessarily from Shemen Truma Shenitmes. So the Gemara says, my love, kavachomerhu. Wait a second. If you're telling me, ma maser hakal, in the case of maser, which is less sanctified, and we'll explain that in just a minute. Omra Torah, the Torah says, lo bi'arti bimenu bitomei, that you're not allowed to enjoy the benefit of that sreifa. So in a case where Maaser Sheni, which has a low level of Kedusha, all Maaser Sheni means is that you're not allowed to eat the Maaser Sheni out of Yerushalayim. But you take it to Yerushalayim, you're allowed to eat it. And anyone's allowed to eat it. So the Kedusha is a low flame Kedusha relative to Kodesh. Kodesh is something that's very severe. And if the Torah says you're not allowed to enjoy the benefit of Maaser Sheni in a case where it contracted tomb and you're burning it, then how much more so is Kodesh in the case of Hegdesh, for example, the Shemen that you were Magdish for a Mincha, Chomor, that's even more Chomor, is Lo Kolshke, and how much more so should we say that you're not allowed to enjoy the benefit of the Sreifa? So Ihachi, the Gemara says, if you're applying that logic, is Truma Nami Lema Kalvachomerhu? Why not apply the same Kalvachomer to Truma? Truma has a greater Kedusha than Maaser Sheni. Maaser Sheni is Mutar for everybody. As long as you take it to Yerushalayim, anyone's allowed to eat it. You don't have to be a Kohen. Whereas in the case of Truma, the Kedusha of Truma is so severe that if a Kohen, if a non-Kohen, a Zar, would eat the Truma, he's going to be Chayv Misa B'dei Shamayim. It's a very severe Isur. Oh, so the Gemara answers, Bahaksiv Mimenu. But the Torah somehow added this extra word Mimenu, and it comes to exclude something else. So let's assume that it comes to exclude Truma Tmeya, and there you're allowed to benefit from the Sreifa. So the Gemara asks, Sumara Isa. But now you have two possible candidates for this exclusion. It could be Truma Tmeya, it could be Kodshim Shenifsalu. So the Gemara answers, Mistaber Kodesh Lo Mimata. If we have a choice between Kodesh and Truma as two candidates, it makes more sense to assume that we exclude Truma. The Torah is allowing you to benefit from Truma Tmeya, in the case of Sreifa, as opposed to Kodshim. Why? Because if you want to set up a heter, it's more logical to assume a heter in something that's relatively kal compared to something that's more chomer. Mistaber Kodesh Lo Mimata. We're not going to exclude Kodesh because Kodesh is more chamur than Truma. So if you have two choices, you'll exclude Truma to allow Truma b'banah, in the case of Sreifa, as opposed to Kodeshim. Shekein Simon Panakakas. So we have six letters over here. Each one symbolizes in a mnemonic device another category. These are six categories of kudshim that make kudshim relative to truma more chomor. And what are these six? So the first one is pigul. The second one is nosar. The third one is karban. The fourth is me'ila. The fifth is kares. And the sixth is iser li'onein. So let's go through these six categories. So pigul means that the Kohen HaOved, when he was doing the avod of the karban, he had the wrong machshava. And there are two types of wrong machshavos. There's chutz l'zmano and chutz l'mkomo. In other words, while he was doing the avoda, let's say he did the zrika sadam, and while he was doing the zrika, he had in mind that the basar of this karba would be eaten outside the azara. That would be one form of pigul. And the Torah says that that pigul is also be'isa kares. You're not allowed to eat that the basar of that karban after it became pigul. He could have had another machshava, not chutz l'mkomo, but chutz l'zmano. Every kodshim has its allotted period of time for achila, and he had in mind that they would eat it even beyond that allotted time. That's also a kind of pigul. Nosar is when he actually left the meat of the karban past the allotted time, and it wasn't eaten within its allotment of time. And that's also an isur kares if you eat the nosar. And then we have a concept called karban. Karban means that kodshim is designated for the mizbeach as a karban. That's not true in the case of truma. Truma is eaten by the kohen; it's not put on the mizbeach. Then we have me'ila. The Torah says that if you have kodshim and you enjoy the benefit of that kodshim, you are in violation of the isur me'ila. And me'ila generates, number one, what's called karen v'chomesh, you have to pay certain penalties. Number two, you have to bring a karban me'ila. And then we get to kares, and we'll see that kares, in the case of kodshim, is more chomur. This may be a chiddush, but we'll have to explain it, but is more chomur than misa b'day shamayim. We said that in truma, a non-kohen who eats truma is chayv misa b'day shamayim. But kares is more severe than misa b'day shamayim, because kares means he'll die, let's say, according to the number of different shitas at the beginning of Masechta Yevamos, is exactly what kares is, but according to one sheet, he'll die before the age of 60, whereas misa b'day shamayim means at some point he'll die, before his time. And lastly, number six, is kodshim is also li'onein. So if a person loses one of his close relatives, then he's not allowed to eat kodshim until after the burial. And that's not true in truma. There's no iser of a kohen onen as far as truma is concerned. So the Gemara says, but adarabba, if you're trying to weigh kodshim against truma, is truma lo mimatina? I wouldn't exclude truma here. I would say the truma is more chomer than kodshim. Shekein machpas. Machpas, again, a mnemonic device that represents four different categories of the chumra of truma as opposed to kodshim. Three of them we'll see here on Chaf Hei Amid Aleph, and then the last one we'll see on Chaf Hei Amid Beis as we turn the Amud. So what do we have over here? We have Misa v'chomesh. Okay, let's talk about Misa. Misa means Misa v'day shamayim. That's a chumra and truma. But the Gemara later on is going to compare Misa b'day shamayim to Kares and prove that Kares is even more chomer than Misa. Then we have Halacha of Chomesh, means if a Zar eats Truma, the Torah says in Vayikra Perek Chaf Beis that he's got to pay an additional Chomesh, another fifth, and that's for Zar Shachal Truma. Next, Ein Lahem Pijon, the third and the fourth, Einland Pidjo Vasura Lizara. So Einland Pidjo means that there's no such thing as being po de truma. There's no truma doesn't lend itself to pidjon, no matter how, no matter what. And even truma tmeya doesn't lend itself to pidjon. Masha Enkein, in the case of kodshim, again, this is a special case of what's called a balas mum, that if a mum falls on a bemis kodesh, then there is what's called pidjon pigeon balas mum, and there's no such parallel to transfer the kedusha of truma over to damim, over to money. No such thing, because of the chumra of truma. And last but not least, it's asur lezaret. Now, in the case of kachim, there's usually an isur zaret, but the exception to that rule would be shlamim. Shlamim is a kind of a carbon which is mutar lebaalim, and the meat of the carbon will be split between the bala carbon, who's not a kohen, and the kohen himself. In truma, there's no way that a kohen could split and share his truma with a zar. And a zar she'ochal truma is chayav misa b'dei shamayim. So the Gemara says that on the one hand you have six chumras in kachim. In a corresponding way you have four chumras in truma. How do you weigh one against the other? So the Gemara answers, hani nefishan. So the first answer the Gemara is that there are more chumras in kachim le'umat truma than there are in truma. It's kind of a very mechanical scale. We weigh six against four. So six is more weighty than four. Iboy Seimer, the Gemara offers a second answer. Kodesh Chamur, I'll prove to you that Kodshim is more Chamur than Truma. Shekein Anush Kares. That Kares for eating Kodshim is more severe than Misa B'dei Shamayim in the case of a violation of truma if a zar eats truma. Now there are two possible explanations, and they might both be correct, as to why kares is more chomer than misa b'dei shamayim. One possible explanation is because, as we said earlier, kares means you'll die be before the age of 60, at a certain age. Misa b'dei shamayim means Hashem will take you prematurely, but it doesn't tell you exactly when, and it could be past the age of 60. And secondly, it's quite possible that kares also, in many occasions, entails what's called ariri, which means that the punishment meted out even to the children of the person who does that violation. And that would be true in the case of kachim, but not in the case of truma. Truma is only misa b'dei shamayim, it's only a personal punishment. So let's just summarize. We now have two different sources to prove that you're allowed to benefit from Shemen Truma Shenitmeh at the time of the Sreifa. The first one was the derivation of Rav Nachman from the Parsha of Truma itself, where it says Trumos Sai, Shtei Trumos HaKosu Medaber, and the Pasuk says Lecha, and Lecha means you're allowed to benefit from it in the case of Truma Tmeah. And the second possibility was Rabbi Avo in the parash of Maaseh Sheni. The Torah says Lo Biarti Mimenu, and the word Mimenu is coming to exclude Truma Shenitma, which you're allowed to benefit from during the time of the Sreif. And now we have a third possibility, and that's Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak Amar Kra. He finds a source in the parasha that we started with in Bamidbar Yudches. And there it says, titein lo, that you give the truma to the kohen, lo, for him. And what does that mean? The word lo is absolutely superfluous, it's unnecessary. Could have said just titein. Titein means a matana. You give a matana to the kohen. What's lo? And the answer is, lo velo li oro. It means that he's allowed to eat the truma, but he's not allowed to burn the truma. And what is the Torah coming to add over here? Michlal, it's coming to exclude debas urohu, a case where the truma is indeed fit for his ar. He's allowed to benefit from the fire of the truma, and he's allowed to burn the truma. And that's the case of truma shenitmeis. So these are the three different sources that the Gemara offers for the halacha that you're allowed to benefit from truma shenitmeis at the time of the Sreifa. Now we go back to the Mishnah. And the Mishnah mentions a category which is called itran. And Rabbi Shmuel, in our Mishnah, excludes itran. He disqualifies it for for the use as Ner Shabbos because of covered Shabbos. So my timer, the Gemara wants to know what's wrong with Itran. Why is it something that we should exclude from Ner Shabbos? Omar Rava, Rava says, Mitoch Sherecho Ra, because it has a foul odor. When you burn Itran, it gives a bad smell. It's kind of a pitch or a tar, and it has a bad odor to it. How much more so kerosene? And Gzera says, Rava, what are we afraid of? Shema Yanichena V'yetze. He doesn't want to stay within close proximity of a fire that gives off a bad odor, so he runs away. Amalei Abai L'Rava V'yetze. So Abai says, so what happens if he goes out? He lit the candle and he was yotze the mitzvah. Amalei, Rava says to Abaye, Shani Omer, my opinion is, Hadlokas Ner Shabbos Chova. Now, just by way of introduction, there are three categories that are fundamentally different. One is called chova, which means an obligation. Another is called mitzvah. We'll see what that means. And then there's a third on the other polar extreme that's called rishus. So the two polar extremes we understand. One is called chova, and the other is called rishus. The chova is an obligation. The rishus is just a matter of option. It has no significance, and it does not engender a kiyuma mitzvah or kabbalah schar. There won't be any reward. But in the middle, we have something called a mitzvah. A mitzvah means that sometimes the Torah gives you a general concept, and the Torah says, achieve X, but it doesn't tell you exactly how and by what method you'll achieve X, and you have any number of options. But it's a mitzvah. Mitzvah means that when you fulfill it, you take advantage of one particular option and you implement that method, then you will be mekayim a greater mitzvah. But that particular pu'ula, that particular specified action is not obligatory. So the question is, what is the status of Ner Shabbos? Is Ner Shabbos a mitzvah unto itself? We call that a chova, or no? It's just a means to an end. You know, you want to express and implement some sort of action in honor of the Shabbos. So there are many different possible ways you could do that, and Ner Shabbos is one way. But there's no independent, absolute obligation to light the Ner Shabbos. Tosfos Dibur Maschil Chova, again, it's a long Tosfos. I'm just going to mention one particular point of this Tosfos, which is relevant to our discussion. And he says the following. Imagine a case where you had lit a Ner. I'm going to give an extreme example. Let's say on a Thursday night. But you lit it in a, you remember we spoke once about an Ashishus, you know, something that has a lot of oil in it. And it lasts all the way till Friday night. So now you have the light. Do you have to extinguish it and rekindle it? So Tosfos says that would depend upon whether Ner Shabbos is a mitzvah or a chova. If it's a mitzvah, so then you already have the light. But if it's a chova, it means there's an independent, absolute obligation to light a Ner Shabbos. And therefore Tosfos says, according to Rava, who postulates that Ner Shabbos is a chova, you would be required to put it out and rekindle it. Tosfos also implies another nafkamina, that if you hold it's a chova, then you have to make a bracha on it. If it's only a mitzvah, then you have a choice of many different actions in which you can express your kavod and your preparation for Shabbos. That would not generate a bracha. And Rava has something that compels him to believe that Ner Shabbos is a chova. It's not just one of many different ways. You know, you could prepare for Shabbos if you're creative about it, in a host of different ways, a myriad of different possibilities. Why dafka Ner Shabbos? So that what's going to be true for Rava is that Rava is going to say that when you eat your seuda on Shabbos, Chazal established that you eat your seuda to the aur of the Ner Shabbos, to the light of the Shabbos candles. This has tremendous repercussions in terms of where we should light Shabbos candles. According to Rava, there's no question in my mind that Rava would require that the Shabbos candles give illumination to your table where you eat your Seuda. And just like Seuda Shabbos is a chova, it's not an option, so too Ner Shabbos as part of the mitzvah of Seuda Shabbos is a chova. And that's why Rava is very nervous about the case where he's going to light his Ner Shabbos and then run away. If he won't be able to eat his Seuda to the Ner Shabbos because the smell is so foul, then he hasn't fulfilled his chova of Hadlokas Ner Shabbos. The Gemara is now going to prove that Rava is not alone. The Omer of Nachman by Rav Zavda, the Amrile Omer of Nachman by Rava, Omar Rav, we now have a tradition that dates back to Rav, right? That's first generation Amoraim, Hadlokas Ner B'Shabbos Chova. And Rav gives us a contrast. He says, although there's an absolute Chova to light your Ner Shabbos next to your Suda, and eat your Suda to the Ner Shabbos, Rechitzas Yodayim V'Raglayim B'Chamin V'Arvis Rishus. But on Friday afternoon to take a bath and wash your body in hot water, that's a rishus. Vani omer mitzvah. Rav Nachman, although he quotes Rav as saying rishus, he himself jacks up the chova, the obligation to wash your body, by one notch. He doesn't go all the way to chova, but he says mitzvah. So it means the following. If we take Rav's opinion, then we have on the one extreme, we have Hadlokas Ner Shabbos, that's called a Chova. On the other polar extreme, we have Rechitzas Yadayim V'Raglayim, that's only a Rishus. However, if you take the Shita of Rav Nachman, he says that Rechitzas Yadayim V'Raglayim on Erev Shabbos in hot water is a mitzvah. In other words, it's not an absolute requirement. There are many different pu'ulos, many different actions that would comprise a kiyum of Kovet Shabbos, of preparing for Shabbos, but this particular pu'ula is very profound, it's very outstanding, and it would generate a mitzvah. It's not an absolute chova, it would not have a bracha, for example, but it would be a mitzvah. So in a sense, it's a requirement, but it's not an absolute requirement, meaning there are many different possible ways of being Mekayim Kvod Shabbos, but one of them is by taking a hot bath. My mitzvah, the Gemara tries to expand on this concept of mitzvah. And the Gemara says, the Omer Rabbi Yehuda Marav, Kachayu Min Hagu Shor Rabbi Yehuda Bar Iloi. This was the tradition, the custom of Rabbi Yehuda Bar Iloi. Erev Shabbos, Mevim Lo Areva Malea Chamin, they brought him a bathtub full of hot water. V'rocheitz Panav Yadav V'Raglav. So on every Friday, he would be very makpid to wash his body in hot water. And the next part of the tradition of Rabbi Yehuda is very interesting. So what I want to do is, I'm trying to open up the Rambam Hilchos Shabbos. The Rambam has a very beautiful description The Rambam says, Ezu Kavod. There are four categories that apply to Shabbos. One of them is Kavod. Another is Oneg. He's got Zochar V'Shamar. Ezu Kavod. He says, Zesha Omru Chachom Shemitzvah Adam. I'm reading the Rambam Perek Lamed Milchus Shabbos Halacha Aleph. Lirchot Panav Yodav V'Raglav B'Chamin Be'er Shabbos M'dei Kavod HaShabbos. U'misatev B'tzitzis. And he covers his head with a talus. The Yoshev Bekoved Rosh. And he should sit there on Erev Shabbos with a sense of awe. Miyachel, and he's anticipating the arrival of Kabbalas Pnei HaShabbos. Kimoshu Yotze Lekras HaMelech. as if he's going out to greet the king. It's interesting, the Bali Kabbalah considered Shabbos as a Malka. The Rambam has the Shabbos as a Melech. The Chachom Rishonim, says the Rambam, Hayim Akabtzim, Talmideim, B'Erev Shabbos, they would gather together their students on Erev Shabbos, Misatvim, and they would cover their heads, V'Omrim, and they would say one to the other, Bo, V'Netzei, L'Kras, Shabbos, HaMelech. And then the Rambam goes on to delineate other methods of covered Shabbos, Sheyilbash Aksus Nekia, and Lo Yehei Amalbo Shel Chol, Kevalgva Shel Shabbos. Now, this is very important for us in quarantine because, somebody could enter the Shabbos and be Mizalza. I mean, no one else is seeing him. So what difference does it make? No, that's not covered as Shabbos. The Melech is coming. And the Rambam goes on to tell you about the mitzvah of Onik Shabbos afterwards. So that's a very important Rambam, which the source of which is our Gemara about Rav Yehuda Bar Iloy. U'misate v'yoshe v'sdinim ha-mitzuyonim. So this last piece about the particular material from which the garment, the cloak of Rabbi Yehuda Bar Iloy was made of, is very important for us because the word sadin is a reference to pishtan, to flax. Now tzitzis has to be made of wool, which means that Rabbi Yehuda Bar Iloy actually wore a talis that was shatnez. But the halacha is, and this we derive from the parash of Gedilim Tasalacha and Lo Silba Shatnez, that tzitzis overrides the iser of shatnez. So you could wear tzitzis on a beged of linen, of that's made of linen, of flax. V'dome l'malach Hashem tzvokos. I mean, if you saw him, you thought you were looking like at a malach. This is on Erev Shabbos, as Rav Yehuda Bar Iloy was mekabel Shabbos. V'hoyu atalmidim mechabin mimenu kanfei k'susan. And they also wore garments that were made of flax, of linen, but they hid the corners of their garment. And he noticed this. Amar lahem, so Rav Yehuda says to them, why are you hiding the corners of your garments? Apparently you didn't put tzitzis on the corners of your garment. And Bonai, and he turns to my children, he says to them, Lokach shanisi lechem, didn't I teach you, my students, sudden b'tzitzis, that with regard to a linen garment, and putting on tzitzis that are made of wool, Beit Shammai potru beisil mechayvim, Valocha kidivre beisilil. Beit Shammai did not want you to put tzitzis on a beged of pishtan, but beisilil required it. Okay, so now the problem is that Beit Shammai did not operate with this special limud that allows kelayim betzitzis. Beisilil accepted that principle. And the halacha is like Beis Hillel, as it always is. But the Inu, the Gemara wants to justify now why the Talmidim didn't want to put tzitzis on a linen garment, even though they knew from their Rebbe, Rav Yehuda Bar Iloy, that we passing like Beis Hillel. Savri gzera mishum ksus laila. So the halacha is as follows. The Torah says, u'reisim also, you have to see the tzitzis. And the Gemara derives earlier in Masechet Shabbos that from this pasuk we derive that a beged, a ksus for tzitzis has to be a ksus yom. Here, this gigantic machlokas rishonim what that means. Let's just go with the shita of the Rambam, even though it's more of a minority opinion, but it'll help us easier here in this sugya. That's all we have to know. The Rambam holds that after nightfall, there's no mitzvah tzitzis. So imagine, you're wearing tzitzis made of wool on a beged of linen. And you do that during the day, of course. But then, lo and behold, you didn't realize what time it is, and it's nightfall. Once it's nightfall, the Rambam says, you're no longer makayim the mitzvah of a re'isim also. And therefore, you're wearing shatnez. So for that moment, until you realize, hey, I got to take this cloak off, because it's already nightfall, you have violated the Isur Shatnez. So the Chachamim, according to these Talmidim, and that's how we paskin in Hilchos Tzitzis, enacted a gzera. They were very nervous about wearing tzitzis of wool on a begin of linen, even though, again, according to the strict halacha, it's mutter, but they avoided it because of this gzerah of ksus laila, that maybe at night they would wear it without realizing they have to take it off, and they would violate the isur shatnez. And that's how we paskin. You know, we don't wear tzitzis on a beged of pishtim. Now we have an agadata, which is based on a pasuk in Eicha. It says, "Vatiznach mishalom nafshi, nashisi tova." My soul despaired of having peace; I have forgotten goodness. And this is Yirmiyahu HaNavi, who is lamenting the destruction of Yerushalayim and the Beis HaMikdash. And he specifically speaks about shalom, about peace, that I have basically despaired of having peace. Maivat is nach mi shalom nafshi. What is he hinting at by using the word shalom? Omer Rabbi Yavo, zu adlokas ner Shabbos. Imagine they were so poor and desperate at the time of the Churban, they couldn't even afford the oil for a candle, just to light one candle for Shabbos. And how do we know that this is so? Because he says, "Vatiznach mi shalom nafshi," and the word shalom here is a metaphor for Ner Shabbos, which is called Shalom Bayis. Now we're going to the second part of this pasuk, which says, "Nashisi tova." I have forgotten tova, for I've forgotten goodness. What does that mean? Omer Rav Yirmiyah zo beis hamerchatz. A beis hamerchatz at the time of Chazal, a public bathhouse was very, very critical. They didn't have private baths the way we have. You know, Baruch Hashem, we live in a very wealthy society, and everybody has a bathtub in his house. But they didn't have that. So tova means the possibility of enjoying a beis hamerchatz, and at the time of the destruction, they couldn't enjoy that either. However, Rabbi Yochanan gives an alternative: zurachitzas yadayim v'raglayim bechamin. They couldn't get access to hot water. Again, for us, it's just assumed, but it was very difficult for them to access any hot water for a bath, and perhaps what Rabbi Yochanan has in mind is that on Erev Shabbos, if you recall, Rabbi Yochanan spoke about washing your body in hot water. They didn't even have that option to be mechabed the Shabbos. Rabbi Yitzchak Nafcha Omar, he said, "Zo mita noa v'kelim noim she'oleha." And all this has symbolic meaning, but literally it means that they didn't have a bed to sleep on. They didn't have clothes to wear. They didn't have utensils to use. All this was lost in the poverty of the Churban. Rabbi Abba Omar, he gives us a little bit more of an insight into the symbolic meaning of the mita here. Zu mita mutsas, a bed that's made up, and isha mekushetes l'talmidei chachamim. So the word mita is a metaphor for a wife, and specifically for the wife of Torah scholars. Now you and I might think that the Gemara is talking about something physical. However, we'll see very soon that that's not so. Tanu Rabbanu, we learned in a Braisa, Ezu Ashir, who is a wealthy person, who is fortunate with that goodness, Kol Sheish Bo Nachas Ruach Bi Ashro, that he can join the he can enjoy the benefits and the pleasures from his wealth. And many people, unfortunately, are wealthy, but they don't enjoy the benefit of their wealth. Divrei Rabbi Meir. And let me just read to you a little bit more about this concept of Isha Mekushetes L'Talmidei Chachamim, which literally means a wife that's adorned for Torah scholars. The word Mekushetes, as the Gemara interprets it in Bava Basra, Daf Samach, is kshot atzmecho, which has to do with midos tovos, has to do with character qualities and attributes. And it doesn't just mean that you should adorn yourself, but it means that you should make yourself more sensitive, and you should fine-tune your attributes, your midos tovos. And isha mekushetes a woman, a wife, who is adorned, milashon kshot atzmacha, means, as Rashi expands upon this, a refined woman. Her midos are very refined. In Yiddish, we call it edelkeit, if you're familiar with that word. In Hebrew, it's called adina. Adina means very, very refined, very sensitive. And the wife of a Talmud Chacham is very sensitive. She brings spirituality into the house. Okay. Now the Gemara gives us a mnemonic device of Mem Tes Kuf Samach. Rabbi Tarfon Omer, Kol Sheyesh Lo Mea Kramim, Umea Sodos, Umea Vodim Sha'ovdim Bohem. So who is a wealthy person? He possesses 100 Kramim. A Kerem is a vineyard. And he possesses 100 fields and 100 servants who work in their fields. Again, the Marsha interprets all this symbolically. And it's Bederek Guzma, Rabbi Akiva Omer, Kol Sheyesh Lo Isha Na B'Masim. Again, this idea of her adorning herself with beautiful deeds. And that's what Eishes Chayil is all about, that whole chapter in Mishlei. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Kol Sheyesh Lo Beis HaKisei Samach L'Shulchano. A person is considered wealthy if he has a bathroom that's close to his table. In those days, you had to very often go very far in order to find a bathroom. So if someone is close, usually when you eat, the food opens up your, the functioning of your large intestine, etc., and you might have to use the bathroom. So you want to make sure that it's close. Tanya, we learned in a Braisa. Okay, now here the Gemara is going back to the issue of oils. Oils that are posel are disqualified for the mitzvah of Ner Shabbos. And Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar omer, ein madlikin bitzari. We don't use something called balsam. My time of the Gemara asked, why am a rabba mitok shereicho nodef? It has a very strong odor. Gzera shema yistapek mimeno. Shema yistapek mimeno, which literally means to partake of it. Now, what does that mean? He may be tempted because this balsam is so rare, so expensive, and such a fragrant odor that he may be tempted to take some of it to use it for his own purposes. And in doing so, he violates the Isur of Kibui. He's liable for extinguishing the light. Omale Abaye, we'll take a look on Daf Chav Vav Hamad Aleph, just to get a head start for tomorrow. Lema Mar Mipneshu Off. There's another possible reason why we should exclude this case of Tsari. And that is because it burns so quickly, it's very flammable, and it's a matter of Pikuach Nefesh, that you might actually burn down your house. And the Gemara answers, Chada V'od Komar. I gave you two reasons, one and another. Chada M'neshu Off. First of all, because it's very flammable and very dangerous, and that would apply even during the week. Even on Yemei Chol, we're not allowed to use Tsari. V'od, and furthermore, there's a specific Shabbos reason, Shema Yistapik Mimenu, because he might violate the Isur of Kibui by taking some of the oil out. The Gemara is going to tell us about a Sreifa later on that happened as a result of the use of Shemen Tsari, of balsam oil. Now, the nafkamina between the two answers of the Gemara would be the following. Let's say somebody decided that he could be careful for whatever reason, and he thinks that he can use this Shemen Tsari and won't burn down the house. He would not fulfill the mitzvah of Ner Shabbos. Why? Because this Gzeira Shem Yistapik Mimenu is a specific Shabbos halacha that disqualifies the use of Shemen Tsari for the mitzvah of Ner Shabbos. So let's just make a note of where we got up to. We're on Daf Chav Vav Amud Aleph, and we're on the third line down from the top, Hahi Chamasa. And if it's Hashem, that will be the place that we want to start tomorrow.